This is the Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Brian Rusk.
Welcome to the Rusk Report on the Bet AM 1520, blanketing 17 states and much of Canada. We have a gentleman on the program today who ran for governor of New York State. He was Republican leader of the state assembly. Very articulate, smart man with vision. I'm sorry he didn't make it years ago to governor, but who knows? They may bring him back by popular demand to run again. Very gifted man, John J. Faso. He served in the 115th Congress from 2017 to 2019, representing the 19th Congressional District in upstate New York. The district included all or part of 11 counties in the Mid-Hudson Valley and Catskills regions. John Faso served on the House Agriculture, Budget, and Transportation and Infrastructure Committees. He was ranked by the nonpartisan Lugar Center, and Senator Lugar was a guest on this program a few times, as the 13th most bipartisan member of the House in 2018. John Faso was a prime sponsor of legislation signed into law in October 2018, which cracked down on the illegal shipment of fentanyl into the U.S. from abroad through the U.S. Postal Service. A very gifted, strong leader. We hope to see him back in Congress at some point. Let's talk about this ridiculous shutdown. It's just crazy how you can shut down a government for political purposes. It's just shameful, and it's also shameful that we look at old tapes of Chuck Schumer, who condemned government shutdowns, and now he's orchestrating one. When will the government open, John Faso?
Well, Brian, great to be with you and your listeners, and thank you for that very kind but perhaps overly generous introduction. But I will tell you this, the shutdown is a terrible thing. It's completely unnecessary. And, you know, I have to say, on a bipartisan basis, it was unnecessary when Republicans shut down the government in 2013. And it's just as unnecessary for why the Democrats have shut down the government in this year. They're really not accomplishing anything by this. And, you know, the House of Representatives hasn't even been in session since over a month ago. And it really is tragic because now we're seeing, people, air traffic controllers, federal employees, the TSA workers at airlines and the traffic controllers not being paid, and all virtually all the federal workers not being paid. President Trump has rearranged some funding within the Defense Department to pay our military forces. And that's all well and good, but that's not going to last forever either. And we really need to get to a point where the parties come together and agree that they have strong differences, but they have to compromise those differences. And frankly, I think for the Democrats to shut the government down after all these years of saying that they were against doing so really exposes them to a charge of hypocrisy. And, you know, now the people who are eligible for the food stamp program, the so-called Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, if you will, people that are entitled to SNAP benefits are not going to receive them this month. And, you know, in a few short weeks, we'll be having Thanksgiving. So I only hope that cooler heads prevail and that we can get this get the government back open, have the employees paid. And, you know, Brian, one of the strange things here is that you've got a lot of federal employees who are furloughed, but as soon as the shutdown is over, they will be repaid. They will get their full back wages, even though they haven't had to work. So, I mean, that's another example of why these shutdowns are entirely counterproductive, because the taxpayers have got to pay for these employees who aren't working through no fault of their own, but they will be fully compensated when the shutdown is over. So, you know, shutting down the government causes agencies an enormous problems, particularly the Defense Department, And, you know, we have bigger challenges than these, you know, domestic disputes we have in the United States. We have bigger challenges from foreign adversaries, particularly China. So it's critical that the Defense Department be reopened, as well as the other federal agencies. So, Brian, that's a perhaps a little long-winded of answer, but I share your frustration about these shutdowns. I think that they're really counterproductive and contrary to our national interest.
And so hypocritical when Schumer gave dozens of speeches saying how horrible a government shutdown is, how it causes pain and suffering, and then he does exactly what he condemned when he's worried about a primary from AOC and the left. Again, I highlight on your resume that you were ranked by the nonpartisan Lugar Center as the 13th most bipartisan member of the House 7 years ago, and I had Lugar into Amherst, New York 40 years ago as a guest speaker at a dinner, and he was the most wonderful man. We were in the sheriff's car, and I kept asking Lugar about himself and his career. He said, "I'm not interested in talking about me. I want to talk about you." He was a wonderful, wonderful man, and also a great Rotarian. Now, I want to talk about the redistricting, as you and Ed Cox have been very active in this for many years. There seems to be hypocrisy. When the Republicans did redistricting, the Democrats condemned it. Now they want to do redistricting, and so they talk out of both sides of their mouth. Let's talk about the redistricting, and especially New York. Are we going to see more gerrymandering for political purposes? John Faso.
Well, you know, Brian, as you know, we went through this elongated legal battle back in 2022 that really was going on for a couple of years. And the Democrats passed a ridiculous gerrymander of the congressional districts in New York State. We challenged it. We were successful in court against all the odds, frankly, because New Yorkers back in 2014 adopted a constitutional amendment that says you can't engage in partisan gerrymandering. District lines cannot be drawn to benefit or advantage one candidate or party over the other. But that's exactly what the courts found that the Democrats had done in New York. And as you alluded to, there's no virtue on either side of this equation. Republicans will do it. Democrats will do it if they think they can get away with it. I fundamentally don't agree with mid-decade redistrictings. And that's what's going on across the country now. And I understand the reason why, you know, partisans on one side or the other want to do it, because they want more control. The House of Representatives is very tightly, narrowly drawn. There's only a 3 or 4 vote margin that Republicans have in the House. This is one of the tightest margins that we've had in a century. And because of the way districts are drawn, there are very, very few truly competitive congressional districts. Out of 435 congressional districts in the country, no more than 30 or 35 are truly competitive districts where the general election voters will get a real choice between a Democrat and Republican candidates. So I think that's one of the reasons why we have such political polarization in the country, because Republicans in most districts and Democrats in most districts don't have to worry about what the general election voter thinks. They only have to worry about what the primary electorate thinks. And so, of course, they will focus their attention on satisfying their political bases. And that's what you've got in a lot of places around the country. Very few competitive districts. Now, just in the last week, Democrats brought what I believe is a very frivolous lawsuit against one congressional district in New York, New York 11, which currently encompasses all of Staten Island and a portion of Brooklyn, right across, to your listeners that are familiar, right across the Verrazano Bridge from Staten Island, portion of Brooklyn, a very compact district. And Democrats brought a lawsuit alleging that this district disadvantages minority voters. And that claim is really belied by the statistics. in that district, Black and Hispanic voters make up about 22% of the entire district. Asian voters, ironically, make up 20%. They're the largest minority group within that district. And white voters are about 53% of the district. So the remedy the Democrats are calling for, they're calling for a racially drawn district between Staten Island and Manhattan. And if you just look at it from a logistical standpoint, you've got a bridge connecting Staten Island and Brooklyn, but you have to, it's water. You have to take a ferry to get from Staten Island to lower Manhattan. So that formulation doesn't make any practical sense at all. So they brought this lawsuit. I think it's a very dubious set of arguments that they're making. I think that the Republican side will prevail on this because we've already gone through redistricting in New York State. In fact, we've done it twice. Once we did it in 22, then they did it in 24, both as a result of court orders. And New York already has a bar against doing another mid-decade redistricting, and that's what this lawsuit is seeking to accomplish. So I don't think it will ultimately succeed. And certainly, if it were to succeed in the state courts, I think the United States Supreme Court would take a dim view of this argument, because if you remember, Brian, just 2 weeks ago, the Supreme Court heard a case on this very question of racially drawn districts from Louisiana. And it appears likely from all the court observers that I've read that the Supreme Court will decide finally that drawing districts based on race is not constitutional. And yet that's exactly what the argument is in this case that was just brought this week in New York. So I think that ultimately this will be unsuccessful, this litigation, but it's another example of how time, money, and efforts are wasted rehashing these same battles, which frankly should only be fought once every decade for redrawing congressional districts.
Well, it sounds just like a grab trying to get rid of Maliatakis in Congress and pick up another seat.
That's exactly what it is, Brian. And you know, one of the ironies is that they're saying, well, oh, this discriminates against Hispanic and Black voters, and yet Maliatakis is a Latina. She's her family, her mother is from Cuba, her father is from Greece, so she's from an immigrant family, but she's also part Hispanic. So it's really rich in irony that they're bringing a lawsuit saying that this discriminates against Hispanics.
Well, it's just to get power. For those who've just tuned in, we have a statewide and national leader with us, a Republican, John J. Faso. He ran for governor, was in Congress, Republican leader of the state assembly, a humble man with great vision, often nonpartisan when he was in Congress, and honored for that. I'd like to thank those who've called regarding our recent guest, Chief Brian Brizzolaro with the Sheriff's Department, famous realism painter D.A. Dunford of Bracebridge, Ontario, and Dominic Cortese, who is fighting this electrification program that will outlaw gas stoves and furnaces. Coming up, we'll have former Vice President nationally of the Polish American Congress, Margot Schultz, and Muskoka, Ontario, famous singers Todd Blair and Robin Hank, all on the Rusk Report. A little plug here, and when John Faso ran statewide, I believe we had him over at this newspaper, the Ampol Legal. On a cool autumn night, there's nothing better than sitting in a warm home with some good reading material. Now is a great time to get reacquainted with your heritage by reading the Ampol Eagle. News, historic, and cultural features from the Polish-American perspective can be delivered to your door each week for just 75 cents. The Ampol Eagle is the way to keep up on the news in Poland and Polonia, with special features in the editions before the holidays. Get a subscription or send one to a friend. Call 835-9454, area code 716, or order online at ampoleagle.com. Just click the subscribe tab at the top of the homepage. That's ampollegal.com, or call 716-835-9454. Some more information about John J. Faso. He served 16 years in the New York State Assembly and was Republican leader from 1998 to 2002. In the Assembly, Faso was the original sponsor of legislation to create charter schools in New York State. In the 25 years since charter legislation was enacted, these independently operated schools have been a resounding success, offering choice and opportunity to hundreds of thousands of students. He was the Republican candidate for governor of New York in 2006 and state controller in 2002. A man of a great vision who often goes beyond party lines. Now, on your resume, it mentions that you served on the House Agriculture Committee. I believe Trump, at the time of this taping, is in Asia, and he's trying to correct the problem with more soybean purchases, which went way down 2025. Do you think we'll have more soybean sales to China to help our farmers? John Faso.
Well, just today, the news broke that China, for the first time this year, made its first order for U.S. soybeans. China was previously the largest market for U.S. soybean farmers. And with the trade fight going on between the U.S. and China, China basically shifted their entire import system to countries like Brazil, Argentina, and elsewhere, cutting U.S. farmers out. And this is an unfortunate consequence of the trade war going on. So, you know, oftentimes, Brian, because U.S. agriculture is so productive and so efficient, when these issues, international issues, arise, you find that farmers are often bearing the brunt of the negative aspects of trade embargoes and things like that. I remember when Jimmy Carter put an embargo on trade with the Soviet Union because of their invasion of Afghanistan. Well, that really was a tremendous blow to U.S. wheat producers who were shipping a lot of wheat to the Soviet Union, which, as you recall, under their communistic system, they could never fully feed themselves because of the inefficiencies of that system.
Right.
So I'm hopeful. I think that the administration is overplaying their hand on trade. The president, this is an issue where he has been consistent really for 40 years. He views a trade deficit as harmful. Most economists don't agree with that. But the concern I have about the president's policy, not that he there isn't a grain of truth in what he's trying to accomplish here, which is to bring more production home, et cetera. But if you look at U.S. relations with Canada, for instance, New York State, for instance, we have a tremendous trade between the U.S. and New York in particular and Canada. Now, the Canadians have never been particularly forthcoming in terms of the dairy issue. And I used to represent a lot of dairy farmers who complained about the way Canada treats U.S. imports. It's highly restrictive. Canada has an entirely different system for how dairy producers, they have quotas and how much they can produce and how much each cow is worth, frankly. And it's a very different system than our more market-oriented system in the United States. So we believe there's undue discrimination against U.S. dairy farmers by Canada. On the other hand, putting the extreme tariffs on, say, copper and aluminum, where we don't produce enough aluminum for our own uses here in the United States, for a whole variety of reasons. We certainly don't produce enough copper. And so my concern with the president's approach is that he's kind of taking on everyone all at once when our main adversary in this market, in this area, is China. And I think that the policy would have been wiser to fight this trade war with allies rather than going it alone and fighting everyone all at once. Now, the administration will say, well, the president is now getting trade agreements, and we'll see. A lot of these trade agreements are not yet finalized, but the big issue is going to be China. And we have an over-reliance on China for rare earth metals, which are critical to the production of computers and fighter jets and other technological equipment that we need in a modern society. We also are overly reliant on China for antibiotics. A very high percentage of antibiotics that are produced and consumed here in the United States that are produced worldwide are coming from China and also India. So we have, as we saw during the pandemic, when we had supplies of surgical masks and other equipment that we needed to deal with the pandemic, we found, we have this supply imbalance. We are overly reliant on China in a number of areas. So I think the president is fundamentally correct about the threat of China vis-a-vis trade. Where I part bit a company with him is the scope and the nature of how he's gone about dealing with the trade issue and not bringing allies into the fight with us. Now, he did a great thing last week when he signed a trade agreement for rare earths with the Australian government.
Right.
And that's the kind of thing that I think we need to continue to pursue because dealing with China, which has a very mercantilistic approach where they have their government states subsidizing manufacturers, and this is what they did in rare earths, Brian. They subsidized the rare earth manufacturers, and they drove down the market price internationally, putting other competitors out of business. And then, of course, as soon as those competitors go out of business, they have a stranglehold on the market. And China has shown itself willing to engage in trade embargoes for political purposes. They did that in 2010 against Japan. They did it in 2015 against South Korea. And they're doing it, frankly, on rare earths against the United States right now.
John Fossil is our guest today, a very gifted former congressman, state assembly Republican leader, and candidate for governor. If you're listening in Cheektowaga, Manhattan, or Washington, D.C., or Toronto, drop us a note to Brian Rusk, Rusk Report, Bet AM 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. Let's talk about this mayor's race. It's a few weeks away. I'm sure you're not a big fan of Andrew Cuomo. However, a lot of Republicans say it's better to have Cuomo than a communist. And definitely this Mamdani is a communist. He wants to take away the rights to private property. He seems to have a dislike for Jews, gays, and Italians. Probably Christians, too. So what's going to happen in the New York race? Does Cuomo have a chance?
I don't believe he does. I think we're just a week out now, Brian, from that election. And I think that the momentum is with Assemblyman Mamdani. I think that he is likely to win this election. I think Cuomo is extremely flawed as a candidate, and that's a big problem that he has. And the advantage of Mamdani is that he had folks running against him who each had their own credibility or political problems. Now, the agenda of this candidate, Mamdani, is, I think, very dangerous. It is unrealistic, and he has a history of making comments that are anti-Semitic, that are anti-Israel, that are anti-capitalism, anti-free markets, and very sympathetic to, for instance, the economy and the government of Cuba and places like that around the world. I don't think all of these comments can be now whitewashed away. And I think we have to take a very clear-eyed view as to where this guy is coming from. And I think that, frankly, it doesn't bode well for the city of New York and indeed the state of New York if he's elected. Now, I could be proven wrong. Maybe he's changed his his spots, but frankly, I don't believe so. I think it's going to be a real problem.
Yeah, well said. Good analysis from John Fossil, former United States Congressman. We have a minute left on the Rusk Report, and you were involved with fentanyl cracking down on illegal shipments. Is Trump doing the right thing, blowing up these drug boats that are killing our kids in the United States?
I think that he is. I think, obviously, you've got to be very judicious about how you exercise that authority. But I think, by and large, if they have proper evidence that these boats are transmitting and transiting illegal drugs into our country, then by all means, I think we are within our rights to counter that. This is a big problem. And, you know, the unspoken part about this whole issue is that you still have this incredible demand for these drugs within the United States. And as long as you have that demand problem, there's always going to be people that are going to be out there to try to bring the supply into our country.
I'm sorry we have to bring the Rusk Report to a close. We were honored to have again John Fossil. We had him on a couple of years ago about redistricting with Ed Cox on the Bet AM 1520. We spent a lot of our program on that today. He was a former candidate for governor. We hope to see him back in the political circles again. He has a lot of vision and intelligence. John J. Fossil, former United States Congressman. We wish you a happy week. Thank you for joining us.
You've been listening to The Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at the Western New York community with news, features, and special guests. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Brian Rusk, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.